Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening and welcome back to another show at Silverbacks Nation. We're talking sports again tonight on August 26th, another Wednesday. And I'm joined by John Daugherty and Pops. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good evening, John. Good evening, Mr. Daugherty, and all you wonderful viewers out there listening to us.
Good evening, Mr. Robinson.
All right. Well, tonight's show, we'll be waiting for Gary Scott to join us. Gary was a former Villanova star and a Chicago Cub. Going to be a good conversation. Also a youth travel baseball coach. So a lot of things to talk to him about on that side of the land. But for now, we're going to give a quick Silverbacks update, guys, and then we'll talk some baseball amongst ourselves. We have a fall season approaching. We were able to get a full season in during the summer, thankfully. From my accounts and my records, we had no issues in terms of any COVID problems. You know, we had gaiters for the kids so they could wear their masks going to the fields. You know, we did our best to keep them socially distanced, made sure they didn't show up with symptoms, and it all seemed to work out pretty well. Our facility is back in operation. We're at the point now where we're running classes, we're doing individual lessons, we're doing mini groups, hitting, pitching, fielding, performance. We got our gym activity going again. We're doing some outdoor stuff and indoor stuff. So we're back in business in that perspective. And our teams are doing well. We had a lot of teams on the field in the summer, tournaments, you name it. We were there everywhere from South Carolina to Connecticut. We had teams playing, you know, every weekend somewhere. It was a lot of fun to watch. We have Game Changer running, which is the technology that we use to track our teams, our stats, and you can watch it online, and you can even listen to the games as they do voiceover. We do have a nice announcement for Silverbacks Nation. We decided to name our very own John Daugherty as our head of baseball moving forward, and we're very excited to have him on board and to direct our the baseball program. I think we're going to be in great hands. John Daugherty, I'd like to thank you again for taking that responsibility.
Hey, John, like I said, I look forward to it. You know, again, I think this is a great opportunity here. You know, I know it's a mutual admiration society. I don't want to start, you know, blowing smoke at you when you say nice things about me and back and forth. But again, I think you have a great facility. By the way, I give credit to Pops because Pops will take the credit anyway. The facility looks really great. I mean, obviously, I haven't been there because of all the COVID and everybody playing outside. But being up there the other night, the place looked really great. And like I said, I look forward to having another meeting tomorrow night. And so basically everybody confirmed for that. And so, again, looking forward to just keep on discussing how we could keep, you know, keep this moving forward and bigger and better. So it's a great challenge, but something I'm looking forward to doing. Definitely a team effort for sure. It's not a one-person deal. It's a team effort.
Yeah, thank you, John, for appreciating my rug burns on my knee, for being on my knees scrubbing.
I told you to get that credit.
Don't ever leave a door open for me. I'm going through it. I was just looking at Gary's birthday. They were escorting me out of high school in 68. My goodness, I'm getting old.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny, too. I noticed it myself. Like I said, you know, all these guests I get, of course, they're friends. I know them. But, I don't know them like my really close, intimate friends and stuff. So his birthday is actually a couple of days ago, as we noticed, and the same day as my wife, and my wife's the same year, no less, also.
How about that?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That is cool.
Like I said, Gary, I know Gary for a long time. You know, we went to Pelham High School, and I actually wanted to ask him, as another gentleman, I believe he's in the minor leagues right now.
Hey, guys, I'm not sure. I think since the storm hit over in Danbury, I've had some issues with my cell phone. And every now and then it just cuts me off. I'm calling in because the quality is better. I was mentioning that we had a great coaches meeting the other night. Everyone's on the same page. We got a bunch of teams ready to play fall ball. We're going through our scheduling. We did most of it in one day. You know, we had four people calling across all of our teams. It was a lot of fun. It was like a stock trading facility. There was a lot of action going on and a lot of coordination. It was great to see. Yeah, so we're waiting for Gary Scott. So we have about 20 minutes, John. Let's talk a little baseball, a little 12U. To the big field. What do you think the focus should be on as those kids make that type of jump to a bigger field?
Well, let me first start out by saying I hate that jump. I really do hate that jump a lot. And I always tell the kids, you know, especially the kids that are, when I say on the fence, I mean a kid who doesn't really absolutely love the game maybe or anything like that, don't get frustrated and don't quit baseball because the next 2 years can be a little tough. I was very fortunate. I played it in what they called Pony League. I don't know if they even have I think Pony League still exists, but I don't know how many Pony Leagues are still out there. But when I made the jump from Little League, East Chester Little League, to the East Chester Pony League, I went from 46 feet of pitching and 60 feet bases to 54 feet of pitching and 75 foot bases. And that made life so much easier to try and go from 46 feet to 60 feet. You know, that brand of baseball sometimes 13, 14 could be like watching paint dry. And, you know, of course, there's some really good kids. And you know, and everybody, you'll see the difference from the first year of the shortstop and third baseman throwing rainbows over to the first baseman to the following year where the ball gets a little bit more on a line, and then until the following year where it's like it's not a big deal. But, you know, when I go watch that game sometimes and I see a kid hit a pop-up and it lands like 3 feet behind the dirt onto the outfield grass for a base hit, it's like, oh, my God, I can't watch this. It's just kind of funny to watch, and I feel bad for the kids. It's just a wholly different brand of baseball, and then they have to worry about pickoffs right away. Nobody balked more as a 13-year-old than I did, because it's nerve-wracking and stressing. The kids, they kind of know it themselves, and they're jacking around on first base and second base trying to distract the heck out of you. So, you know, I just want to make that point first, and you know, again, it is what it is. Everybody's in the same boat, and just kind of deal with it, basically.
Yeah, you're going to have to deal with it because, they're like John was saying, the Pony Leagues. I remember the Pony Leagues, but they're a thing of the past now. They just want the kids to make that jump. But you could tell them it's like taking your TV and making it the full screen. You know, you got to just got to work along with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think back in the day when they switched to Babe Ruth League, I don't think they were so strict. Like, this is how I always remember that you can't go back. Once you leave Pony, you can't go back. And so, again, but I still believe there are some ponies out there. But then again, I could be wrong. And I know even the Cal Ripkins, you know, from doing my lessons over the years and still obviously doing them, kids going to the Cal Ripken. Again, that's even a younger age. Now you got to worry about guys stealing, I think, as early as 10, 11 years old, which that brand of baseball, I mean, I don't want to knock Cal Ripken, of course. He's kind of taken over, you know, the whole Northeast of baseball. But I just think that's a lot to be worried about. And from what I hear, I've never played in those leagues. It's, you know, you get on first base, and if you're a decent runner, you're on third base after the second pitch, and you're just waiting for, you know, a pass ball or a base hit, and you're scoring runs, like, you know. So that to me is you know, I'm not really digging that so much, and I just think it's so much harder on a pitcher at that age to be worrying about, you know, holding runners on and such.
I just think you got to encourage the kids a little bit more for that. Yeah, you got to encourage them a little more, though, John, because it's very easy for them to get disheartened when they start playing a little sloppy baseball or they can't handle the change. Like you said, they will grow into it. You just have to keep giving them the confidence that it can be done, and it will be done.
100%, and that's where the coaches are very, very important. I totally agree with you. And then, again, the coaches are so important to just keep motivating them. And you know, again, let them know it's everybody's deal with. It's not just you. It's not just the guys in your team. It's the guys that you're playing against in the other leagues as well. And it just is what it is. I mean, you know, and again, I think the kids, like, you know, again, like my son who played ball, like John's sons are going to be, I believe, you know, they love the game. They're going to keep on playing. I'm talking about the kid that's kind of like, you know, on the fence, yeah, I'm liking it. You know, it's okay. I kind of play because of my friends, whatever. Because those are the ones who you worry about. And again, everybody, I say this all the time, and I was one of those too. I mean, I was always a, you know, good player. But again, everybody develops at different stages. So I hate to see a 13-year-old kid who is kind of thinking that way and then decide they don't want because it's not fun anymore. It's boring because it'll pick back up again, you know, before you know it. And like I said, you, all of a sudden you may be one of those guys that grows that, you know, 4, 5, 6 inches, and you're like, oh man, I should stay with baseball. Not that you can't always come back to it. You always want to, you know, that's why baseball has, you know, 6 different divisions in the minor leagues, because there's constant growth going on all the time.
But like you say too, though, you got to really have the love of the game. I mean, if you have a kid that doesn't really have that fire in the belly, so to say, right? You're really going to have to pick them out if you're coaching. You're going to have to single them out a little bit and try to get them to react without making the whole team see you trying to get them to react, so you don't embarrass them or anything in that area. You know, that's another issue. That's another big issue.
Yeah, Pops, every kid I get for the first time in a lesson, like for the first time I'm meeting them, and or, you know, I'm just getting to know whatever, that age, that's like first thing I tell them. That's the first thing I tell them, because that's where a lot of my lessons come from. You know, I get a 12-year-old, you know, dad with a 12-year-old whose son has to move up, you know, to the next level. And, you know, what can I do to help him out with the distance of the pitching and or talk about, you know, pickoffs and balking and holding runners on, all that kind of stuff. And that's basically the speech that I just gave a few seconds ago is basically my speech to them. like this is how the game's going to go for the next couple of years. Don't get discouraged by it. It's, you know, again, everybody else is in the same boat, and you'll see how within 1 year you'll see how from 13 years old to 14 years old, how much the game is going to get even better, and then even 14 to 15, how it's going to be like, oh, this is no big deal. You know, each year you get a little bit further back from third and short. You're throwing the ball a little bit harder. Catchers having a lot more ease throwing down to second. You're not taking half a hour to run from home to first. It's just a lot different.
That's
you get bigger and stronger. I can keep growing.
That's true, but the hard part is just getting them there where they can say, oh, this wasn't too bad, you know, after you lost about 80 hairs off your head.
Yeah. Well, that, again, that's where the coaches come into play and keeping it fun and changing it around and practices and even the games. I mean, you can still have a lot of fun at the games, too. I mean, you want to be serious, of course. You want to win the games. You want to, you know, play hard. But, you know, good coaches make it fun for the kids all the time.
Yeah, well, I always tell them, too, John, if you give 100%, you're a winner already. So whether that scoreboard says you're up or not, as long as you're doing the best you can out there, I have no problem with that at all.
Yeah. There's no – no excuse for trying hard, trying your best, and you know, giving it your all the time.
Exactly.
I say the same thing all the time, Austin. I mean, you know, when you go on the field, you can what you should do. That's part of my speech too. Preparation is huge in giving you a chance to succeed. It doesn't guarantee your success, but it gives you a chance to succeed. And if you walk off the field filthy and sweaty and stinky, and you tried your hardest, you know, that's all you could do, because this is a very, very difficult game. It's as simple as that. We say it all the time. Baseball is a very hard game. There's a lot of failure built into the game of baseball. And you just got to go out there and give it your all and keep on preparing, though. Just because, you know, like I said, you may go over it. It's like, oh, this preparing stuff is nonsense. No, it's not. You keep preparing, and it's going to come to fruition.
That's absolutely true. And it's really a forgiving game, too, because it gives you – well, in major leagues, it gives you 9 innings to get back to where you want to be. So if you make a mistake in the first inning, you can get back at the third and fourth inning. So
yeah,
it does give you a lot of leeway.
Yeah, and you know better than anybody. You go 0-4, and you can still help your team win a game.
There you go.
I mean? You may go 0-4, but you know your fifth at bat, you lay down a sacrifice. Well, maybe it's even your first at bat, you lay down a sacrifice bunt that moved the runner over that got knocked in by the next guy, and you guys win 1-0. You went 0-4. You gave a sack play. You made, you know, 3 ground ball plays you made in the infield, or you caught 2 fly balls in the outfield, and you guys won 1-0, and you had something to do with it because you sacked the guy over to second base, and the next guy got a hit for him. So,
right,
you know,
exactly.
People don't look at it like that. There's so many ways that you can help your team win, whether it's stealing a base, turning a double play, diving play, you know, whatever it may be. There's so many ways you help your team win in a baseball game. That's what's fun to me, especially as a position player.
Without a doubt. Well, the fellow we got coming on tonight should know better than everybody about how it is to come back and win a game, because he's got a story he can tell us, which I'm looking forward to hearing about.
Yeah. Gary, like I said, Gary was a very, very tough competitor in high school that I played against him at Pelham. I actually got to pitch against him. I don't know if you'll remember when the minor leagues, I want to say he was with the Geneva Cubs and I was with the Niagara Falls Rapids, obviously the Tiger organization. And I believe I faced him that day. Hopefully he remembers that I got him out. But but that was a long time ago. But in high school, like I said, he was tough and like a super athlete. I mean, you know, again, you know, point guard. I'm 90% sure he played football as well. I didn't play football, so I can't remember. But obviously shortstop. I mean, he just was a phenomenal player.
Yeah.
And just a great person. I mean, I talked to him today. I said, Gary, man, I really, you know, would love to see you. I just miss him. I mean, and we were never friends that way. Again, he was in another town than me. But, you know, we got to know each other a little bit. And he's just such a good person, such a fun person, such a positive person. And you know, you love being around those kinds of people.
Well, you were on the field at the same year, 92, but the Interleague didn't come until, what, 97. So there was no way you were going to see each other. But you were both playing ball at the same time in 92.
Yeah, he just, you know, he was just in the other league. And again, playing for the Cubbies, it's a lot, you know. I that's why a lot of times I say I was glad I got drafted by the Tigers, because everybody's who's Detroit? Where the heck are they? You know, that's, you know, whatever. You know what I'm saying? Low key. I mean, Cubbies are Cubbies. You know, they're whether they're in first place or last place, they're the Chicago Cubs. They're a very well known organization, very high profile organization. You know, sell out crowds every single game. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of extra pressure that he had to deal with that I didn't have to in Detroit with 10,000 people in the stands.
Oh, that's absolutely true. Absolutely true.
Did we lose John again? Is he not going to be on?
No,
I'm here. I'm just listening, guys. Keep going. I mean, the one thing I wanted to add. What, Pops?
No, I thought you were throwing us to the wolves. What happened?
No, not yet. The day will come. The day will
come.
Okay. You know?
Okay.
The wolves are feasting on others at the moment.
Good. Well, that's okay with me. It's okay with me.
No, yeah. You're okay. You've been approved.
I'm in.
You're an approved member of Silverbacks Nation. John, the one thing I notice when the kids get up to the big field is you can determine right away which kids throw with their legs and which kids throw with their arms. I mean, that's like the first thing I notice.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where the important footwork that, you know, John Call talked about way back, you know, when we first started doing this months ago. And I used the analogy when I played in that old-timers game, I played shortstop for an in. I threw the ball, I thought my arm fell off. And then I was like, oh, yeah, you're supposed to follow through after you throw the ball. So, you know, the next ground ball I got, I followed through. It's like I had no stress in my arm at all. And that's why footwork is very, very important. And, you know, hopefully, again, we'll get John Call hopefully up there a bunch of times this winter and working on that. I know I just sent him one of my pitchers who had no idea that he played shortstop also. And John Call spent an hour with him. The kid called me. He's like, oh, how come you didn't tell me about this guy? I said, well, how come you didn't tell me you play shortstop? Like, I had no idea. And John Call worked with me. He says, I can't even tell you what he did for me in one lesson. Just getting my feet right in the position. And then again, doing that little bit of follow through afterwards. He said, because there's a kid that has arm problems also. So, you know, that is very, very important that they need to work on footwork and not just, their strength in their arm.
Yeah, he's amazing, that guy. I watched him the night you had all the fellas there that night at the Batcave, and he was showing what he does and what guys have to do to get him ready for games. And he's just got so much energy, and his work ethics are really impeccable. They really are.
Yeah. I mean, and Gary is the guy, too. We'll hear from Gary shortly. I mean, you know, Gary's a guy, too, that I know he put in a lot of work. I repeat myself over and over on these shows, but you know what Matt said about working in the dark and coming out in the light. I mean, Gary, I know, did a lot of work that nobody ever saw him do, because he just took such pride in what he wanted to do, and succeed on the field and stuff like that. And I know he worked really hard, and you know, that's what you got to do. I mean, that's the kind of things the younger guys need to know. And our coaches need to tell them also, it's like, guys, you come to practice, you can work hard in practice, but, you know, how long is practice? An hour and a half, you know, maybe 2 hours, you know, maybe once or twice a week. You know, I understand the winter and this training and all that kind of stuff. But, again, there's so many other things you could do on your own. And I know as pitchers, you know, you don't need a ball. You don't need a glove. Sometimes it's just standing on your balance leg for 3-5 minutes a night. I mean, you know, that's a helpful tool. Sometimes it's just, you know, going through your motion and kind of like, you know, in a 50% speed and just stopping. As soon as you land, just stop. See if your weight's out front. See if your weight is back where it needs to be. See if your arm is up. See if it's down. Where's your front arm? You know, I say these things. I don't mean 100 times a day. I'm talking like, 25 times a day. I try to leave all the kids I do lessons with, I try to leave them with like 10 minutes of homework. I said, you know, I'm not asking you to do an hour or half, even a half hour, because I know you're not going to do it. I said, if you don't do some of the things I'm asking you to do for 10 minutes, I mean, you're crazy.
Yeah.
It's just going to make you that much better. Coming to me, I say, you can come to me once a week for a whole year. You'll get better. I'll make sure you get better. But if you come to me, you know, once a month, but do the things I ask you to do, you know, you're going to get better also.
Yeah, you got to do the work. You definitely got to do the work. John, what do you do when a fella like the kids, and I see it, you know, I see it not so much in the younger guys, around the 14s, 15s and up. And they do the work, okay, and they do try, and then they don't do that good. They tend to come down on themselves a lot. They're hard on themselves. What do you do in a situation like that? What would you recommend to a coach or somebody?
I'd want to see everything that he's doing that he's doing on his own. Like, hey, give me a rundown of what you are doing. Make sure he's doing it properly, for sure. But then also, again, you know, just keep on encouraging. You got to keep working hard. Everybody comes in different levels. I got a beautiful text the other day. I was actually sharing it with a couple of guys the other night. And during my lesson, what I talk to the kid most about, because I notice he gets discouraged during my lesson. And I'm like, dude, there's no crying here. I'm not dealing with that because I'm too old to deal with young kids crying. He's an 11-year-old, right? And I know him for a while because I had his older brother and stuff like that too. So I could talk to him like that. And his dad, of course, is standing right there. But our lesson basically talked about you can only control the next pitch. I said, if a guy hits a 500-foot home run, you don't, you know, put your head down and start crying on the mound. That pitch is over with. You can't get it back. There's nothing you do. Just like if you throw a pitch and you strike a kid out, you don't stick your chest out and, you know, smile. That pitch is over with. Nobody cares you just struck that guy out. Now you got to throw a strike on the next pitch. And so it's really one pitch at a time, one batter at a time, one out at a time. I've been saying that forever. I've been quoted like that forever. I, as a pitcher especially, and, you know, I'm always talking as a pitcher, is that, you know, I have four guys behind me, three guys behind them. If they don't do their job, I'm not going to be successful. It's as simple as that. So I tell my pitchers, you know, and you know, managers may not like hearing this, but if I give up four ground ball base hits in between third and short, I did my job. I got a ground ball. They just happen to go in a hole. When I'm giving off, you know, ground rule doubles and the ball's banging off the wall and over the wall, that's my problem. That's my fault. I need my catcher, of course, to, you know, call a good game. I need him to frame a pitch once in a while. I even need the umpires to help me out once in a while and give me a strike maybe. You know, so there's so much that's involved for you to be successful. And I know I'm running around your question.
Absolutely. But John, now you gave me the reason why I was always charged at the mound, because I used to grin whenever I struck somebody out.
Yeah. I'm just responding back to Gary real quick.
Yeah, yeah. So, Pops, you used to laugh when you struck people out?
Oh, I'd grin a little bit. I'd be happy, you know.
That's
why
he has no friends.
Yeah. That's right.
There you go. That's why. Nobody wanted to play with you.
Yeah, it was my ball. I'd go home. Nobody play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we got
so,
Beach
so,
Street Eddie around tonight.
It's the constant encouragement, Pops. Really, it really is. But again,
yeah.
If he's doing
absolutely
some stuff, like take a look what he's doing at home on his own. Make sure he's doing it properly, because a lot of times,
yeah,
again, that's why I even tell kids. I say, listen, this is what I want you to do. I said, go home when you do it. Make sure you send me the video of it. And you know how many times I don't get it, but it's like, okay, don't send it to me. But you know, the guys that do send it to me, I know they're a little bit more serious. And then even from there, sometimes I got to tweak it, because even though they did it right in front of me, you know, because I make them do it a few times, I you know, I show them what I want to do. I say, okay, now show me that you understand it. And they do. And then, but I said, make sure you send me a little bit of video. It doesn't have to be a half hour. Just, you know, depending on what I'm asking to do, send me four clips of this, four clips of that, whatever, 10 seconds each, something like that. And then I'll analyze it to make sure that they are doing it right, because there's nothing worse than practicing the learn uselessness. You know, if you're doing a drill the wrong way, it makes no sense.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yes, I just tell John to practice his wind up in front of a mirror, so he can see what he was doing and just constantly repeat it. Repetition, 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 till you get it right.
I actually busted out some mirrors. I forget what year it was. I'm brain cramping now. I can't remember if I was in the big leagues or if it was my last year minor league camp, but they finally busted out a bunch of mirrors for us. So I was like, yeah, that's a great tool.
Sure it is.
So helpful.
Sure.
And nowadays with the cell phones and the iPads and the GoPros, if you don't use them, you're crazy.
But what's scary is the guy in the mirror, if he starts doing it better than you, then you got a problem.
You won't be talking to that guy in the mirror.
No. A lot of times I talk to that guy.
Yeah, and you got to remember that. It's also, we're not dealing with college kids or pros. So you're dealing with 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds, 13, and their coordination is not really perfected. And, you know, the easiest thing, like standing on one leg and their foot will be sideways, right? Or they're arching, just things that, you know, an athlete that's been training for years wouldn't do. So it's the constants on them. Right, so you just can't have them go off on their own and do these repetitions 100 times, 200 times. You're gonna be in a worse spot because they're gonna do it wrong, and they're not gonna get anything from it. Which is why we try to have the kids come in three times a week at a minimum, three times a week. You know, if you
go to
clinic 4 or 5 days a week, it'd be great. Huh. Yeah,
get them lights going again and get them running. This way, they get their coordination.
Yeah.
I think a lot of them are afraid
awesome
of making a mistake, falling, or something like that. Yeah. It'd be great. I might even use it to get back in shape myself.
No, you should. You should. You feel a lot better on the field. You'll help the kids out, you know, more. You'll be more energetic. You should do it.
Oh,
you know,
yeah. No, I know.
It's 7:30. We're waiting for Gary Scott. He'll be joining us soon.
We're
heading into the fall season. Hopefully there's no problems with him calling in. I know we've had some technical problems in the past. I think you know, hopefully that's resolved at this point. We'll find out soon.
John, can we tell anybody when the fall season is going to kick off?
Yeah, well, we're going to start next week.
Okay.
The schedules will be distributed.
John,
probably.
You heard that?
What's that?
Call can't be completed.
I didn't hear.
Time. That's it. Call and then tell them to call again.
Okay. I guess they still have platform problems. Okay. We'll wait for Gary. But Pops, there he is. Okay. Let me unmute. Give me 1 second. And we have Gary Scott on Silverbacks Nation. Gary, how you doing tonight?
Great, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining. I have John Daugherty and I have Pops, who's my dad, on the line, ready to take it away in a minute. Say hi, guys.
Hi, Pops.
Hi, Mr. Gary Scott. How are you?
Doing great, thank you. Is this connection good? I'm on a headphone, so hopefully it sounds good.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it sounds great. Sounds great. Gary, Pops, you are a tremendous baseball player. Star at Villanova, Chicago Cub. Tell us a little bit about your journey to the pros.
Well, my journey in short started probably when I, 5 years old, when I started playing T-ball. And I played all sports growing up. I played baseball, basketball, and football. So I really only played baseball in baseball season. And it wasn't really until I got to college, to Villanova, that I played one sport for a whole year. And in fact, now you have so many kids playing in all these travel leagues and they play in a fall league, and you could have a 12-year-old playing 100 baseball games in a calendar year. And the most baseball games I ever played was my freshman year at Villanova. We had 50 games. And prior to that, John would say, John, what were our high school baseball seasons? Less than 20 games, probably 16 games, right?
Well, unless you were one of the best teams, unless you were one of the best teams in the county and you won 25 games. But other than that, yeah, mostly 20.
And would that have been Eastchester High School?
That would have been Eastchester High School, who beat Pelham twice that year. But that you weren't there anymore, though. So, oh, no, actually, you were there. What am I thinking? You're younger than me.
Yeah, I must have been sick those games. I must have been sick.
You must have. Right. But,
so
Gary,
really,
isn't it crazy, right, when we talk about that, how crazy is it? Like you said, kids nowadays are playing like 100 games, and we're a travel organization, so we don't want to promote that you shouldn't be playing a lot of baseball. But I'm just saying, it was so different back 30, 40 years ago, where like you said, I played probably 12 games in the summer for the local rec department, and that was it.
Right. No, and I actually was only talking about my journey really in that, my freshman year at Villanova. That spring season, we played 50 games. And, in the fall, the fall of my freshman year, we had a little bit of a fall season. I lifted weights all winter with in mind that, I had my first collegiate spring coming up in the spring of 87. And, all of a sudden I played 50 games and just concentrated on baseball. And I was All-American, and so that's kind of how it started. For me, really, the first time I had any kind of sense that baseball might be in my future professionally was really when I was a freshman in college. In high school, John, I might have had a game or two in high school where there was like a scout at the game, and
right.
It just wasn't on the radar, but, I do think, look, for kids that love baseball, if they want to play 100 games a year, it's fantastic. Look, the more at-bats you have and the more pitches you see and the more adjustments you have to make as a young kid, you could argue the easier it's going to be for those that want to continue. It just wasn't my experience. I was a three-sport athlete. And, in fact, basketball was my better sport when I was in high school. So, in the summers, I used to go to sleepaway basketball camps. Maybe I'd go to a baseball camp locally, like Dom Ciceri's camp or something. But I really just played basketball all summer when I was a kid. It wasn't until I went to college that I really just concentrated on baseball.
That's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah,
late bloomer, kind of.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you said that, because we were just talking about that, how kids develop. How coaches, having a coach, or, you know, how important coaching is, rather. I don't care what age, but how important coaching is. And, it, you know, even going back to Little League, like, you know, because, you know, a kid in Little League, you know, may not be able to tie his shoes and chew gum too well, at, you know, at 8, 9 years old, but he may be the starting shortstop, you know, several years later, you know, because everybody develops different. And that's why I said there's six different levels of minor league baseball before you get to the major
right.
leagues, because you're constantly developed. Constantly developing. I mean, you see guys, you know, 26, 27, all of a sudden something may click in, and you know, all of a sudden, you know, they wind up having a career. You know, look at this guy I just saw on the Brian Gumbel's show, the Real Sports, whatever. He was a speed skater, and his brother was playing professional baseball. And like at 20-something years old, he decides he's going to try and go back to playing, and he got called up because of the corona thing on the Marlins. He got called up, and it looks like he's going to stick around for a little while, like in his late 20s, maybe even 30 years old, I think, something like that. It was crazy. So, you know,
well,
you could
take a good athlete, and for the kids that are out there that do play more than one sport, you know, lacrosse now is big in Connecticut where I live, and lacrosse wasn't really a sport. I didn't even know about lacrosse when I was in high school, but, you know, you could argue that you take a good athlete, and then all of a sudden make them concentrate on one sport, and they really can kind of skyrocket. I mean, I remember a story when I was drafted by the Cubs my first year in A-ball, which was in the Carolina League. The Cubs had signed a kid out of Panama that had never played baseball in his entire life, but he beat Carl Lewis in the 100-meter dash one year in the Pan Am Games, Carl Lewis being one of the all-time greatest sprinters in U.S. history, right? And this kid, Fernando Ramsey, I remember meeting him. He was on my team in A-ball, and he literally had never played baseball in his whole life, but he could hit a ground ball to first base and beat it out, you know?
Right.
He could hit it. If he hit a routine grounder to second or short, there was a 50% chance that he was going to be safe at first. I mean, he was lightning. And he had big, big legs, and,
incredible.
You know, they taught him how to throw, and they taught him how to catch, and he actually had, you know, a couple of games. He made it to MLB and didn't have a long MLB career, but here's a kid who literally never played baseball until he put on the jersey of a professional organization. So,
that's amazing.
You know,
it is amazing.
Sports has all kinds of stories.
Yeah, and that's what makes him great, Giancarlo. The Prima, who, you know, is a Coach of Siri disciple, too, from, you know, but like 9 years younger than me. He talked about when he was at St. John's and he played Notre Dame. And the ground ball came, he went to throw it before he threw it. The guy was crossing first base. He's like, who the hell is that guy? And he was a punt returner, kickoff returner for Notre Dame football. The guy was like,
exactly.
He's like, I realized I arrived. Like, you know, I don't know if I should be playing at this level in college baseball. It was a pretty funny story. You coach a little bit, guys.
Yeah.
So do you still watch the game at all a little bit here and there? I know a lot of guys,
do.
I love asking that question. Yeah.
I do a little bit. You know, this is a weird year, obviously, because of COVID. But prior to this year, I don't watch many baseball games, regular season games. But I like watching playoff baseball. You know, I like watching games when I know how much they mean. I know how hard it is for these guys to get to the playoffs. How many great players never played in a World Series? How many great players never won a World Series, right? So I do like watching postseason baseball. And in the past 20 years that I've been out of the game, you know, I've been to a lot of postseason World Series games, some great Yankee stuff in the old stadium. I would always go to, you know, all those series at Yankee Stadium. So I do like postseason baseball, you know. I like any kind of postseason game because I appreciate how much it means to these guys that, you know, have put their lives into their profession. And now, you know, everyone wants a ring. Everyone wants a championship. And there's so much behind the scenes that go into that. You know, baseball is a very, very long season. It's 162 games. And, you know, how many guys, you know, were fortunate to play in a postseason or a World Series, you know? A lot goes into that.
Yeah, I agree with the statement. Like I love playoffs. Anything. It could be hockey. It could be, you know, whatever. I definitely love postseason stuff. And baseball, again, it's just easy. Summertime. You know, I because there's really nothing on TV in the summertime either. Like all the TV shows that you may watch or get into, that's really, that stuff's on hiatus. So, and again, of course, it's my first love too. I love watching baseball. It's easy when I'm working out. I watch it here and there. But the analytics of it, you know, what's your thoughts on all that stuff these days when they're talking about velo and spin ratios and all that kind of stuff? Because that wasn't around when we were playing.
Well, it's interesting, and, you know, it's real. It's technology, and I'm a big golfer, and so I do appreciate launch angle and spin rates, right? And I get it that in baseball you have that too. You know, when we didn't have that when we were playing, you know, you hit it hard and you tried to hit it far. You know, we really didn't know exit velocity, but you could kind of tell. I mean, look, I played third base in MLB, and I didn't know what Cecil Fielder's exit velocity was, but all I know, when he hit a one hopper at me at third base, it was really fast.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because it is now obviously a part of training, you know, where, you know, there is a specific launch to whether it's a golf ball or a baseball, and
right,
those numbers mean something. You know, and I coach Cal Ripken now, my 12 and 13 year old boys. And once in a while, one of the, boys, not mine, someone on the team might, you know, should I be swinging up to have a better launch angle? And I'm like, well, look, the furthest I've seen you hit it all year this year is like 170 feet. So don't worry about launch angle, you know,
right,
just choke up and
love
hit it.
It
hard, you know?
All right. That's funny, right? So it's contact. Hitting a baseball is hard enough. Don't worry about trying to hit a launch angle.
Yeah, get a good pitch to hit and swing. You know, a lot of these kids, it's funny. And I do like coaching, and I like the mental aspect of hitting, you know, especially like the age kids that I'm dealing with a lot. And I'll see a kid go up there, and he'll take like a very weak 2-0 hack. I used to swing 2-0 where if I missed, and it wasn't very often that I would miss a fastball 2-0, I might fall over, right?
Yeah.
And I try and tell these kids, like, are you actually trying to hit the ball as hard as you can? Because that's what
right,
you're supposed to be doing, 1-0, 2-0, 3-1, et cetera. And, you know, it's a mindset, right? If, you know, 2-2, 3-2, there's a different type of approach as a hitter. You know, choke up and hit it hard and don't stride so much and put it in play, and you just don't want to punch out, right? But in different counts, you know, get after it. And I like kind of seeing that transition in a 12-year-old where they all of a sudden get it. Because maybe a lot of them didn't hear that when they were 9 or 10. It's funny, I think Jack Nicklaus actually once said, you know, when you start out playing golf, he wanted to see kids kind of swing as hard as they can and hit it as far as they can, and then kind of back it off from there and work on your directional control, et cetera. But, you know, then again, you can't really teach bat speed, can you?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Good point. Go ahead, Pops. I know you're dying to get in there.
Yeah, I got so many questions I want to ask them, but you had a great college career. You really did with Villanova. They retired your jersey, as a matter of fact. That's correct, right?
That's
then
correct.
Then you went to play with the Cubs, and you play with guys like Greg Maddux, Rick Sutcliffe, Joe Girardi, Mike Ryan Sandberg, Andre Dawson. I'm a big Cub fan. My Cubs, my mom came from Chicago, but I'm 70 years old, so my Cubs are the old Ernie Banks and Ron Santo. And I know he gave you a lot of praise in a write-up, Ron Santo, when he said that the kid, meaning you, he said, can't miss. He's not only going to play here for 15 years, he's going to be a big star. And whatever records I have, I hope he breaks that. How did that make you feel when Ron Santo said that, a guy of his caliber?
You know, it's funny. I remember the quote that you just brought up. And, you know, everything happened so fast for me. So, like you mentioned, Villanova, my junior year at Villanova, which was the year I was drafted, I I lost the batting title in Division One in the country by 1 point. I hit 448,
yes.
And some kid down in Texas hit 449. So I basically hit 500 my junior year in college and 200 and something at bats, right? Which is getting a hit every other time you're up, right?
Amazing.
And I'll tie this into kind of Ron Santo and the fast transition to MLB. You know, I only had 1 year in the minor leagues. I went from A ball to the big leagues. And in that period, all of a sudden, I found myself a year out of college in spring training of 91, talking to Ron Santo every day in spring training before a game in the Cactus League where we were in Arizona. And it's not that I anticipated hitting 500 in MLB, but funny enough, that spring training in 91 and the way I made the team, I hit 400 in spring training. You know, now, how many at-bats do you have in spring training? You know, you have enough. Spring training's probably a month worth of games, right, after a couple of weeks of tooling around. So that first year, that first spring training in 91, I basically was getting a hit every other time I was up. And John knows, maybe the beginning of spring training, the pitchers don't, but you're in MLB camp, right? So the pitchers maybe don't have their June stuff, but they're getting ready for their season. And as spring training goes along, they're good, right? And so that's what Ron Santo saw when he made that quote, you know, me hitting 400 in spring training and the kid's a campus kid, right? Well, unfortunately, then the season starts in 91, and I realized that it's not that easy to hit 400. I mean, who was the last guy to do it? Ted Williams, right, I think.
Well, you're a good company then, huh?
Yeah. So, you know, Ron, I got along with Ron very well, and, you know, that praise, I was a pretty humble kid, and that praise was nice. But I think when I then started the season with the guys you mentioned, right, like I didn't really have a concept necessarily who these guys were. I mean, I was 22, and my starting right fielder was Andre Dawson, and my starting pitcher was Greg Maddux, and Joe Girardi was the catcher, and Sean Benson was the shortstop. Yeah.
And 92, Sammy Sosa joined you.
Sammy Sosa joined in 92.
Yeah.
So my first year in MLB when I made the team in 91 –
wow.
I think I had three teammates that ended up in the Hall of Fame, Greg Maddux,
incredible.
Ryan Sandberg, and Andre Dawson.
Yeah.
And I was historically a slow starter. And there's a lesson here, you know, getting off to a slow start in MLB is different than getting off to a slow start at Villanova or at Pelham High School or in your first year in A-ball in the Carolina League. You know, I remember my first MLB game, I was 0-for-4. It was against St. Louis. In fact, my first at-bat, I hit an absolute missile between short and third. My first at-bat in MLB, literally squared this ball up as perfectly as you could. I took a half a step out of the box, and it went through my mind, oh, my God, my first at-bat, I got a base hit, right? And I looked, and Todd Zeal was playing third base.
Oh, boy.
Completely laid out and dove and caught this ball.
Incredible.
And I remember running back to the dugout going like, geez, this might actually be hard up here, you know? But, you know, after that game, I went to my locker and, you know, here's a kid who, as you mentioned, Ron Santo just said, can't miss kid. He's going to play here for 15 years. I go 0-for-4. We have 161 games left. And at my locker, there were 20 reporters asking me, you know, are you nervous that you went 0-for-4 and that it's going to be hard here? And I'm like, wait a second. I have four ABs. If I'm here all year, I'm going to have 550 at-bats. Like, let's take it easy.
Give it a rest, yeah.
That was there every day, and I think as a really young kid, and as John mentioned before, the levels of minor leagues, I skipped a lot of those levels. And so I wasn't necessarily prepared for what
That's
it was really
going
to be like there. And I think in hindsight, it would have been nice if I – even if I went through the minor leagues fast, if I just kind of had a little bit of double-A, had a little bit of triple-A, as everyone knows, the pitching gets a little bit better at each level. I mean, I literally went from college to MLB.
Yeah, you didn't get a chance to settle in.
No, that first game that I mentioned, my last at-bat, Lee Smith was the closer for the Cardinals.
Oh, boy.
Yeah,
you didn't have a chance.
And I was 0-2 right out of the gate, and it was like 35 degrees out at Wrigley. He's like 6'6". He's standing on a 2-foot mound, and I remember 0-2, he exhaled out his nose, and smoke came out his nose. I called timeout. I called timeout to the umpire because I had to take a moment and clear my head because I thought he looked like a dragon.
Oh my God.
And I
That's
battled
funny.
Him to 3-2. I fouled off a couple pitches and I popped up. But, you know, look, MLB's hard. That's why those guys get paid a lot.
Like, you know, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
We talked about it all the time. Like, it's easier getting there and staying there, right? I mean, it's like I said, it's a very, very tough thing to do. And I totally agree. Like, I really never knew your whole journey, to be honest with you, because I know you, whatever the case is. But, like you're saying, like, rushing people to get there, like, what – you got a gem. Like, what are you rushing it for? You know what I mean? And I remember Luis Salazar told me that when I was in Venezuela. I was there for, like, 10 days. And, you know, like, I was just happened to be talking about you. And he said, yeah, rushing a poor kid, you know, whatever. Just like that, he kind of, like, in his broken whatever. And I remember he said nice things, you know, really nice things. You know, he kind of like looked out for you or whatever the case. He looked out for me in Venezuela. Didn't even know me. Just was a super nice guy. But like
Isn't
you said, I was telling you earlier, like I feel lucky getting drafted by the Tigers because I was playing in Detroit with 10,000 people, and you're playing for the Cubs, who were known all over the world. It was full stadiums all the time. With a you know first place last game, you're playing in packed houses all the time, and you know that added pressure. It's crazy. It really is.
Yeah, I went from 1990 in A-ball in the Carolina League. There might have been 500 people at the game. And then my first MLB game ever was opening day at Wrigley. There were 37,000 people there. But on that point of Luis Salazar, it's interesting. You know, here's a guy that a lot of people would never know his name. He had a long career in MLB. He was never a superstar, right? But he just did his job. And I think, you know, a lot of athletics, you have to have the correct perspective, especially as a young player. You know, I was so used to being a superstar from when I was 5 through college, my first year in A-ball, and then all of a sudden I'm in MLB. And what I didn't really understand then, and looking back and as we talk about it now, that team already had its superstars, right? I didn't have to be a superstar. And I remember Don Zimmer, my first manager, when he told me in spring training, there were like 2 weeks left of spring training, I'm hitting 400. And he goes, hey, Scotty, comes out to me. I'm shagging balls in the outfield. And he goes, hey, listen, I want to talk to you. I'm like, what's up, Tim? He goes, the rest of spring training, I just want you to relax. And I'm like, well, I'm pretty relaxed. You know, I'm hitting the ball well. And he goes, no, I want you to relax because you're my opening day third baseman. And he goes, listen, you're great defensively. We have a great lineup. We have some superstars on our team. I just need you to make your plays and you'll hit and just relax, right? But that's easier said than done. I was so used to getting a hit every other time up, right? That all of a sudden I put a lot of pressure on myself to be so great so early. And when you look at a guy like Luis Salazar, that's the guy I replaced. He never hit 350. You know, he never hit 330, but you know what? He made his plays, he hit 270, and he had a long career. And, you know, if I had hit 250 my first year in MLB, I probably would have played for 15 years, you know, but it didn't go that way. And I think a lot of that was pressure that I put on myself. And, you know, I'd say one of the greatest takeaways from my career, even though my career in MLB didn't go the way I dreamed, is that now I can talk to kids that I coach, and some are very good and some might not even play after Cal Ripken, you know, but to tell them, look, it's okay to have big expectations and set very, very high goals, but ultimately just play your game and be comfortable. And if you're comfortable, your skills will come out. The skills that you have will come out. You know, there's an interesting, I heard this the other night, if any of you guys ever watch Faraday on the Golf Channel, right? It's kind of a one-on-one David Faraday interviews, not just golfers, but celebrities that love to play golf,
etc.
And so he's talking, he's doing a Kenny G. Everyone knows the musician Kenny G, who has a good swing and plays in a lot of these pro-ams. And Kenny G was talking about his anxiety sometimes, like playing in his comfort level. And Faraday says to Kenny G, he goes, you know what? The best advice I ever had, and David Faraday was a great player, played in the 1991 Ryder Cup, War on the Shore, won a bunch of tournaments, but never had a real good PGA Tour career, right? He liked to party too much. Anyway, David Faraday says to Kenny G, when it matters the most, play as if it matters the least, right? Mm-hmm. And that mentality, that what he's trying to say is just be comfortable, you know, because then your true talents, whatever those are, will truly come out, you know. I like that quote.
That's important.
I wish I knew that quote back in 1991, but yeah, I just heard it like 2 weeks ago.
That's advice, though, and great advice for a kid. They put so much pressure on themselves, and you can't play when you got the tight butt. You just can't. You know, not that you should be just carefree and, you know, whatever, but when you know, you can't be too loosey-goosey, but you definitely can't. And don't you think that, you know, most players, you know, especially young players, they do. They put too much pressure on themselves. That's some of the things I'm always trying to tell kids. I go, you can't strike out the side on the first pitch. You can't hit a grand slam home run with nobody on base. I mean, the kids are just trying to do too much sometimes. And like you said, you're absolutely right. Let the game come to you a little bit.
Well, Gary,
so
you
laugh.
Don't...
My
right.
Go ahead.
No,
I had
no,
a funny
again,
story
what
on
you're
this
saying.
Topic. My 12-year-old and Cal Ripken were playing in the championship of our league about 2 weeks ago, and he's the starting pitcher. And the winner is the champion of Greenwich, Cal Ripken, right? Big thing for the kids, but obviously in the grand scheme of things, not that big a deal. Anyway, my office mate told my 12-year-old the day before the game, he goes, if you walk less than four, because my 12-year-old can pitch, but he can be a little wild. He goes, if you walk less than four batters in the championship game tomorrow, I'll give you $100. And my son goes, really? By the way, $100 to a 12-year-old is a lot of money. So my office mate goes, yep, if you walk less than four batters tomorrow night, I'm going to give you $100. So how do you guys think this went? The next night, my 12-year-old starts the game. This is 2 weeks ago. He throws 42 pitches in the first inning, walks three guys, and hits them. We lose the game. We lose the game on the ride in the car after the game. I'm like, buddy, what happened? You threw 42 pitches in the first inning. He goes, how many guys did I end up walking? I go, well, you walked three in the first inning, and you hit a guy. I think you walked six in three innings. And he's like, damn. And I go, you were focused too much on the $100, weren't you? And he goes, it's all I was thinking about in the first inning, right? He had his eye on the – now, of course,
on the prize.
I went and I yelled at my office mate the next day, and I'm like, you ruined his game. You dangled that $100, and it's all he could think about, right? As John and everyone knows, if your eye is too much on the prize, you lose sight of what you're supposed to be doing pitch by pitch. Baseball's not only a one-inning game at a time, a one-out game at a time, it's a one-pitch game at a time, right? Mm-hmm. And I could tell, I watched my son that first inning, and he was pressing, and he was rushing, and he got out of his rhythm. And I could tell, you know, all he was thinking about was don't walk a guy. And John, great pitcher, John knows, that's not how you pitch. You pitch, each batter, where do I want to throw this ball? You know, this is what I need to do. This is a setup pitch. I'm going to throw this off the plate here because my next pitch is this, right? You're not, you know, you lose sight. If you're too focused on something external, you can really lose sight of what you're trying to do. And anyway, I just thought that was a funny story.
Yeah, that's true. We're talking about your career, and you made it to the major leagues, which is a feat in itself. But you were scouted, picked up by Billy Blitzer. Is that correct? And you
Billy
had met
Blitzer
him a while.
Was the Cubs scout.
The scout, right. And you met him a while back, and you got a lot of class because you apologized to him for not having a better career and disappointing him. And he came back with a quote that I think was fantastic. He said, never think like that. You made the major leagues, and that's a great achievement in itself, which he's 100% correct. So I think you put a lot of pressure. I think we all put a lot of pressure on ourselves when we're in that position to try to prove ourselves. But we should never get down on ourselves, because we're in that spot because we deserve to be there. So I thought that was
correct.
Very good advice for them. Now tell us
and
about that 13-pitch hit.
Good homework on Billy Blitzer, by the way. That was a good.
Well, like I said, I was a big Cub fan, you know, because I was out in Chicago for in Wrigley Field a few times, and I really loved that
but
place.
What you just said too. Let me comment on one thing before I tell you about this Grand Slam. Is believing that you belong, right?
Right.
When you get to the big leagues as a young player, you know, every big league team has a couple of superstars on it, right?
Sure.
That are really so
sure.
much better than the other guys. And each team has that guy. The rest of the guys, they're all really good, right? And, you know, when I got the call to be the opening day third baseman for the Cubs in 1991, you know, it wasn't like I wasn't terribly nervous, but when I got off to a slow start and I pressed, you know, there was sometimes that question, do I belong here? You know, and when you play out of your comfort level, you know, you have to belong. You have to believe that you belong where you are, that you wouldn't have made that team if you weren't special. But
exactly.
Again, then just do your job. You know, you don't have to, as a rookie, yeah, sure, it'd be great to be rookie of the year, right? But as a rookie, you just need to catch your grounders and get your hits and be a smart player and be a good teammate. And that's the kind of start that I wish I had gotten off to. I mean, I was a good teammate, but I think I never got comfortable. And as John mentioned earlier, you know, when you start pressing and you're not comfortable, you know, your true talents can't come out. So you want to talk about the 13-pitch Grand Slam?
Yeah, I know you never get asked about it, so I figured you'd be wanting to talk about that one.
Yeah, I mean, look, the good thing about only having 3 home runs in MLB is you remember each one of them, you know?
Yeah, that's great.
Well, funny about the 13-pitch Grand Slam is I knew that was 92, so I made the team again in spring training in 92, so I was the opening day third baseman for the Cubs 2 years in a row.
That's
and
right.
We're about a month into the season, and once again, I'm off to a slow start. And the 91 season had ended when I got sent down to AAA in 91. I broke my hand. I got hit by a pitch, and my season ended. So I didn't even have much AAA. But I went to Winter Ball, Venezuela, also in the offseason in 91, and I made the team again out of spring training. So, I mean, 2 years in a row to be the opening day third baseman, you must have some type of skill set, right? Have that. And about a month into the season in 92, I'm struggling again, and I'm feeling like, you know, I'm playing every game as if I might get sent down the next day, and that's not a good way to play, right? And so this 13-pitch Grand Slam that you're talking about, you know, bases are loaded, it's a tight game, it's probably fifth or sixth inning, Greg Maddux is pitching. And, you know, I work a count, it's, you know, 2-2, 3-2, whatever it is. And then I think there might have been 11 foul balls in a row, right? There were
I think it was 11. Yeah.
Great. Something like that. But
it was great. It was a great at bat. It was one of the best I've seen.
And I remember saying, I'm not punching out. Now, what's funny is, had he thrown a ball over the catcher's head, I might have swung. Right,
yeah.
Because, I mean, his mistake was he kept throwing me strikes, right? And
you
could argue that
eventually
I'm going to hit one, right? I mean, I think if he had thrown me a ball, I probably would have swung and missed. I definitely would have swung. But he threw me a curveball, and thank God the wind was blowing out. And, you know, I hit a grand slam at Wrigley, which was, I mean, it's my greatest memory. I got sent down, I think, 2 days later. Because the next day I had no hits. And funny, I got to AAA, and my first game in AAA, which was like 2 nights after hitting the Grand Slam at Wrigley, I hit a Grand Slam in Iowa.
Oh,
so
you're kidding.
It was kind of cool. But
cool.
I then came up again during that year, got sent down again, and then at the end of the year came up again to to the Cubs, and then was part of the expansion draft, went to the Marlins. But, you know, some of the kids I coach, they've watched that 13 pitch at bat on YouTube, I guess you can find it. And
I'm watching it right now.
I try to tell them, you know, with two strikes, like a lot of these kids, they end up getting punched out looking. And, you know, these umpires that are umping in Cal Ripken, you know, they're good umpires, but they're umping in Cal Ripken. And if a kid throws a pitch a few inches outside, a few inches in, a few inches up, a few inches down, you know, and you take it, you're going to get rung up, right? So I try and tell these kids, look, you know, you can hit a ball a couple inches off a plate and you need to with two strikes. And, you know, just don't. You got to have this mindset that I'm not going down. I'm not punching out. And funny, you know, when I think about like Villanova, one of the coolest stats I think I had my junior year, which was, you know, just a great year hitting, right? I was kind of locked in for the whole year, was I had more home runs than strikeouts. And, you know, that's a really weird stat, right?
Yeah.
Most guys that hit a lot of home runs strike out a lot. They might strike out five or six or seven or eight times for every home run they hit. I think I hit 22 home runs and struck out 18 times.
Amazing.
So,
amazing.
You know, I wish I had kind of carried that along with me to MLB, but it is harder up there.
Gary, well, you did good.
I'm sorry, Puff. Gary,
well, go ahead,
Justin. I want to keep to my honesty of the 30 minutes, even though we went over a little bit. I can't thank you enough. Like you said, before you got on, I was you know, patting you on the back for just what a great guy you are. Like I said, I really do miss you. I know we were never, you know, buddies. I told these guys we grew up in different towns and stuff like that, but you're just such a good person. You're such a positive person to be around. The kids that you're coaching, you know, parents should be thrilled to death because, again, you're just such a good guy. You know, if you want to leave us with a couple, you know, a little bit of advice, you know, I'm a big stickler about running on and off the field, so if you want to use that as one, that's fine. But any kind of just quick words of wisdom for, you know, another thing for the kids that are listening, and then we'll let you go. But I really can't thank you enough. Please say hello to Mom and Dad for me and everybody else, and we'll catch up real soon in this post-COVID world here, hopefully soon, rather than later.
Well, thanks for having me, and my words of advice are the same ones I pass along to these Cal Ripken kids that I coach, and it's one, believing in yourself, you know, and anticipating, you know, great things. You know, you have to believe that, you know, when you go up and step in the box, that I'm getting a hit this time up. And that means getting a good pitch to hit, but anticipating that next pitch is a good pitch to hit, right? Believing a lot of young kids hit where they want to see the ball first and then decide they're going to swing, right? No, you have to plan on swinging. And then if it's not a good pitch, you take it, right? And then same thing defensively, you know, you watch a lot of kids play defense. You know, I remember playing games where at third base, if there's 100 and let's just say an average game, your team is throwing 120 pitches, right? At third base, I might only get four ground balls a game, right? So there's 116 pitches in that game, in that 120 pitch game, that I don't get a grounder. But how every single pitch do I believe the next one's coming to me? It's coming to me. This next one's coming to me. And you got to do that for a couple hours, and it's hard. You know, baseball, there's a lot of standing around, and I try to tell these kids, when they show up to the field, for 2 hours, you guys have to give me your full focus and concentration. My defensive guys, every ball is coming to you. Believe it. What am I going to do when I get it, right? That's when you see a kid that has great instincts, he has a great brain, right? Cal Ripken, one of the greatest shortstops of all time, had fantastic range. It wasn't because he was so quick. He thought well. He knew what pitch was being thrown. He knew how to kind of lean. He knew batter's tendencies, right? So it's that anticipation of whether it's a good pitch coming to hit, or the next grounder's coming to me, or the next fly ball's coming to me in the outfield. It's that belief. You got to do it for a couple hours while you're there at the park, and then you can shut that brain off and go play Fortnite, right? But it's being mentally there. When you're at the field for those couple hours, can you be present every pitch? You can't do it every pitch, but can you almost do it every pitch, right? And that's what I try to kind of press on my guys. is just being there and being nowhere else for those couple hours.
That's awesome, Gary. Living in the moment, absolutely. And we're gonna smile on that as you get off the call. We're gonna talk some more about that stuff. But again, really want to thank you a lot. I don't know if John, are you still there, John?
I'm here. I enjoyed that quite a bit. Thank you very much for joining us. Great stories and a great baseball player.
My pleasure.
Thank you, John,
for
letting me talk to Gary with my Cubbies. Go Cubs.
Gary, thank you, Jim, bro. Love you. And again, we'll talk real soon, okay? You be well.
All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Thank you,
Gary. Take care.
You're welcome.
What a class act, John.
I love what he said. But like I said, living in the moment. And, you know, and that's why, again, and John, we've had this conversation recently, you know, when I go and watch these games and I see the first baseman walking out, you know, to his position while the other guys are waiting and he's throwing a ground ball when he's at the pitcher's mound and, you know, he's kind of rolling it. It's like it drives me crazy because, like he just said, he may get 2, 3, 4 ground balls a game. I remember pitching a game one time and Eric Davis said, that's the first game I ever played in my life that I never got a ball ever. So, it, you know, like that happens every now and then. But, when in between innings, to me, the position players, you need to run out there. You need to get out there. You need to get at least 3 ground balls from that first baseman. And that first baseman needs to throw them with something on it. And you need to field those 3 ground balls like it's a game situation. Because if you don't, and he just lobs it to you and you only get the 1 throw over there, maybe even 2, and you don't feel it like a game situation, it could be the 5th inning that, you know, first pitch hit at you, rock it, and it goes through your legs. Or, worse, it could be, you know, 2nd and 3rd and a ball's hit at you that you haven't fielded a ground ball since pregame warm-up, which was, you know, an hour and a half ago, and that ball's going to go through your legs and you're going to bobble it. So it's that kind of stuff where it all correlates to just, you're there at the game, be in the moment, live in the moment, know the score, know how many outs there are, know what inning it is, because it's going to be over in a blink of an eye and you're going to be back on an hour car ride home. So, and that's not the fun part. The fun part is playing on the field.
Yeah, yeah. I would hate to have faced him back in the day. Sounded like a super hitter. He probably makes you feel bad as a pitcher. You make a mistake and then you pay for it.
But he got good advice, too, from Zimmer. Look at the cast of characters he had on that team. And there were superstars to beat the band. And all Gary had to do was fit in defensively. But what happened? He let his mind go, and he says he wasn't doing what he should be doing, and that's hitting. So, you know, he fought himself probably pretty hard. This is what I had said to you about a player coming down on himself, John, remember? We talked about that.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
He's one of the best athletes I've ever seen, you know, and people still tell you this day. I really think the organization messed them up a little bit. And like you said, you bring along guys too soon and whatnot. And you see it all the time. It happens all the time. And I really think he was, you know, a victim of that because he was a really good player.
Sure, because you're not every day going to get praise from a guy like Ron Santo. I mean, who's he?
Also, obviously, he had all the tools. He could run. He could hit. He could field. You know, and I'm not saying he couldn't do it mentally because, you know, Gary went to Villanova, very bright guy. He has a very successful career right now. You know, I'm not going to get into his career, but he's a very successful guy in his career now. So it's not like he's, mentally inept or anything like that. But
448 average.
And you put that extra pressure on yourself, it's difficult. Yeah. I don't care if you paint in the house. You put too much pressure on yourself, you ain't going to paint it too well.
Well, I tell you, if they told me I was going to be the starting third baseman for the Chicago Cubs, they would have to get me out of the bathroom. It'd be kind of a big job to get me out there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But another good interview though. With, like I said, another good person giving some really sound advice, which is what I love. I mean, guys, you know, speaking from the heart. And you know, I told you guys, you know, when you first met me, I said that's what one I tell a lot of my people I give lessons to. I feel one of the reasons why I'm a pretty good guy at that because I tell you from my experience. I'm an open book. I don't mind telling you stuff. And here's Gary, you know, expressing some of that stuff as well as a lot of other guys we've had in the last 2 weeks also, which is what's great. And I'm hoping these kids and obviously the parents are really, really appreciating it.
Oh, yeah, but here's how humble he was. He apologized to his scout for disappointing him. I mean, how much more humble can you get?
I feel horrible when I heard that. I mean, I feel like, you know, hey, like I said, this is not an easy game, man. It's just not. It's just simply not. I mean, speak, because I know who Gary is. But that's just, you know, that's kind of crazy. But, you know, God bless him for that. But and God bless the Scouts answer. I love the Scouts answer.
It's phenomenal answer. But that's just the stories in the story. See, people don't know that. People will say, oh, Gary Scott, when he was with Chicago, they don't know this. They don't know what he went through, you know? That's the sad part.
That's for sure.
Yeah, and it's just it's the encouragement, too, that, you know, especially when you're dealing with, you know, 8, 9, 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds, heck, even 14, you know, they make their errors, and it happens a lot. And, you know, you get a lot of coaches who still yell at the kids. Like they meant to do it on purpose, and that just discourages them to even come back and play. I mean, those are the types of things that, if the coach is yelling at the kids, then the kids think it's okay to yell at each other, and then you lose that support, and then you lose that that team camaraderie, and then at that point your teams break down, and we see that over and over. And you know, we try to tell our coaches that, you know, you want to make sure you can handle the players in a way that you encourage them even through their failures. Otherwise, they're gonna grow up not liking the game of baseball, and their careers will end sooner than they'd like. I mean, you know, a lot of careers, well, every career ultimately ends. But you try to play as long as you can. I mean, that's the goal for anybody who loves the games that they play.
Well, that's what you're there as a coach to do. I mean, the good players are going to play. It's the ones that aren't playing good. Those are the ones you have to encourage, and that's what you're there for. You're not there for the good players.
You're there for every player. You're there for every player. Like, it's as simple as that. That's what coaching is about. You're there for every single player that's on your team. I don't care if it's 12, 15, 25 players. You're there for every single player on your team. So, you know, that part is just the way I feel, for sure. I mean, you have to be. And, again, yelling at people. I mean, I understand you may get frustrated with kids who are jacking around and not, you know, playing the game the right way and all that kind of stuff, but I'm never going to get mad at a kid for dropping a fly ball. I mean, that's just part of it. You know, if he was looking in the stands and the ball was hit at him, and, you know, again, I'm not going to yell at him, but I'm going to say, dude, you got to pay attention. You know what I'm saying? You know, something like that. But, you know, like you said, to try and that, you know, again, when you're young and maybe a little bit harder, and that's something you practice, you know, focusing on the game, focus on the next pitch, focus on the next pitch. And, you know, because before you know it, again, your games are two and a half, 3 hour games sometimes, especially as you climb up the ladder. So, you know, the focus has to be there the whole time. It really does. Not easy, but it has to be.
Yeah. Well, my point before was that, you know, you are there for all players. That's true. I agree with that. But you're there mostly for the kids that need the help, that really got to give them a little more special attention and get them to play up the par a little bit, you know. So you bend a little bit with them. You give them a little bit more if you can. That's what you try to do.
Yeah. Yeah, right. It's a balance. I mean, some kids need that extra tone in your voice to wake up and focus more, and some go the opposite way. It's just important that coaches really take some time to understand each kid individually and not just treat everybody the same as a group. You know, that relationship that, you know, coaches have with youth athletes, it's totally different than what they have in college and in pros. And I think it's great. It's amazing. You're guiding these young athletes. I mean, you think about it, we're leaders for young men and women. That's what we are as coaches in youth sports. We are their leaders. We're their mentors. We're their role models, in a sense. They look to us for advice and for direction. And, you know, if we fail them there, we set them off on a different path. And we have a huge responsibility, and we try to work with the parents to get the kids on the right path, and each kid through their own roadmap. And it is an individual thing. Even while you're playing as a team, everyone works on their own. They improve their game by themselves, their training by themselves, and then they come together as a team to work on teamwork. You know, baseball is one of those 9 individuals on a field all playing as a team, but, you know, they got to get their work done on their own. And here we are as semi-parents, just because we're the adults and they're children. And we're teaching them how to go through all the life lessons that the game provides us.
Yeah, well said, John. I mean, we talked about the all night. I mean, you know, being a coach is a serious responsibility. I mean, you know, people just take it sometimes as like, oh, you know, especially, and I understand Little League of Dad wanting to do it and, you know, whatever the case is. And, you know, but if he's doing it for the reason is just to make sure that his son is, you know, playing short and batting first, that's not the right reason. If you're there because you think you have something to offer and you're going to treat the kids well, then so be it. And then, it's, you know, especially too when it goes into travel and now, you know, there's a little bit more money involved and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's not always just the better kids playing travel ball. I mean, you know, every kid wants to play. They love the game. They love the game. They may not be the best player, but they love the game. They want to play spring, summer, fall. God bless them. But, you know, you got it. It's a real big responsibility. And I know one that I don't take lightly when I coach, not at all.
Yeah. And Pops, you did it for many years. So, I mean, you
yeah, you're a babysitter too. People don't realize that. Some people come, they'll drop their child off and off they go. You know, you're responsible for those kids, every single one of them.
Yeah.
You got to make sure they don't get hurt. Make sure they stay in the area, don't wander off. It's a responsibility. And if you're not willing to take it, don't take it.
Yeah, sure.
Exactly.
Okay, well.
But this was a great show. John, again, you outdone yourself.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. You know, I just, Tom Padula is actually giving us somebody. I got to call him. I don't know what day he'll be available. I spoke to another gentleman, one of Shane. You guys remember Shane, the strength coach, a few weeks back, who gave us the last strength coach, Steve. I just spoke to another gentleman that he definitely wants to be involved. So, again, we'll figure out who I get for next week. But at least we got two other people that I know. And you know, I still got some former players that I gotta get back to me and vice versa. They said they want to do it, it's just their schedule. You know, summer's a little hard. Everybody's traveling and whatnot, but we'll make it work and we'll go from there. But it's gonna be a great night, guys. Really appreciate it as always.
Fantastic.
John, I'll see you tomorrow. I got responses, two more responses, so we'll have a full boat tomorrow night. And I look forward to seeing you, pal.
All right, sounds great. Pops, thank you. John Daugherty, thank you very much. Gary, great guest. Appreciate it. Hope Silverback Nation enjoyed the show, and we will see everybody next week. And good night to Silverback Nation.
Good night, John. Good night, Mr. Daugherty.
Good night, Mr. Robinson.